You're listening to the Driving Confidence Podcast for drivers who want to be calm and confident on the road. We will be sharing tips, stories, and advice to beat driving nerves and anxiety and build your driving confidence. Whether you are just starting out as a learner or have had your driving license for years, if you want to transform how you feel about driving, this podcast is for you. On today's episode, we're welcoming on Tom Stenson, who is head of training at the ADINJC, which is one of the main associations for driving instructors. Tom delivers numerous talks and workshops to help driving instructors develop their skills. So we thought that he'd make an ideal guest to come on, share his wisdom with anxious drivers. So welcome, Tom.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, welcome, Tom. So I know we've watched you talk lots, and one of the talks we was at, you were talking about biases. Now, that's the word that I can say at the moment. I won't go into what you call it, but let's just call it biases at the moment. So that talk, what was it about, Tom?
It was about how kind of our brain can often deceive us, and it makes us a little bit biased about some of the things that we see and some of the things that we think that we see. So I think one of the words that you're referring to is one of my favourite words, which is conspicuity. And in simple terms, this is how conspicuous something can be. So we have what's called sensory conspicuity, and that is perhaps a motorcyclist who's wearing brightly coloured clothes. So it makes them a little bit more visible to our senses. But the cognitive conspicuity part of it is that if we're not actively looking for the motorcyclist, even if they're in brightly coloured clothes, we probably won't see them.
Lovely.
Kev's trying desperately to say something without having to say conspicuity. But you said it earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, sort of.
Now, I loved this when you were talking about this, because this was, there's all sorts of biases. And this was one that I wasn't really aware of. It wasn't one that I'd heard of. It was one that I had to practice saying. But also, once you talked about it, suddenly I was seeing examples of it everywhere. So like you do, once something comes into your awareness, you spot it everywhere, don't you? And we had an example. So you were talking about it at a conference. Shortly after that, we saw some examples of exactly what you said. Yeah. So this was an example of something slowed down on the motorway and the angle that the car was at. So did you want to go a bit more into that?
Yeah, that this is one of the, I love research. I'm just one of those people. I like reading research, and I kind of like learning things. And where this research came from was quite a few years ago. They found that emergency service vehicles, when they were stopping specifically on sort of faster roads like motorways, they were stopping for an incident. They'd have their blues and twos going, but the emergency service vehicles were still being crashed into, and they couldn't quite work out why this was happening. So they did lots of research, and they found that our brains couldn't really decipher the difference between us travelling behind a moving vehicle and a vehicle that was stationary. So what they tended, or what they do now, which I think is amazing, the fact that they've made such a small change that's actually equated to a big change, because now vehicles very rarely get crashed into. They position emergency service vehicles at a 45 degree angle when they're stationary. What this does is sparks our conspicuity. I get to say that again. It sparks our conspicuity, and it makes our brain go, something's not right here. And we then focus more on it. So even though the vehicle, the police car, has got these big blue flashing lights, and they've got these yellow and green Battenberg colours all over the vehicle, if we position it at 45 degrees, it looks out of place. And so our brain thinks that's probably stationary. So they kind of did all this research, and that's what they found out. So it's interesting that once we begin to understand this stuff a bit more, we see it more, which is again, kind of that conspicuity thing. I think the one that everybody's familiar with is when you go and buy a car. Nobody has the same car as you until you go and buy one, and then you see them everywhere.
Yeah, or if you're planning on buying a new car and you're weighing up the options, and then you spot it everywhere, don't you?
Yeah, you realise your next door neighbour's got one and you haven't seen it before.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. And we had two examples after you gave that talk. We had two examples. One was at high speed on the motorway where we saw exactly that. We were like, oh, I think that car's stationary. And we, you know, we didn't notice it until a lot later than we perhaps would have done. And then we had one very locally, didn't we? Where actually we did see the police car. It came up, zoomed up. It parked at a 45 degree angle, which they, and they jumped out and ran after the baddies, yeah. Didn't they? Yeah. so we saw it all happen in action, and we're like, yes, there. We'd not really. The only thing is that they did block the whole road, and then everybody was doing all sorts of bad things to get around the police car.
Right.
But it was really interesting to see it and notice it and go, okay, now I understand why they're doing that. And it does make it really obvious, because what happens then is, one of the things I've noticed is, as experienced drivers, we'll be driving along and then suddenly we'll say out loud, oh, what's going on there?
Yeah.
So I think sometimes anxious drivers think that they're the only ones who aren't sure what's happening, what a situation is, and maybe that level of uncertainty leads them to feel more anxious. But actually, anybody, as experienced drivers, you see something and Kev, you talk aloud a lot where there's something unusual up ahead and you say, what's going on there?
Oh, thank God you said that one.
Yeah.
But that's exactly it. It's not the norm.
Yeah.
There's something different, isn't it? And that's what changes it. See, I always thought that a police car, ambulance, whatever that was, parked at 45 degrees because they was the other side of it. And if someone hit that car, it would move away from them. The car wouldn't directly go at them. And probably that's because of my training. We was always taught, again, I'm older. So handbrakes never used to be that good. So yeah. If the handbrake failed, you used to position your car on heels or whatever in a certain way so that it didn't roll so far.
Yeah.
So my thoughts were, well, that's just they're doing it because of that. But now it's really interesting how research has changed the way we think.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned earlier about thinking. And I think that's really important that we notice research, because I'm not a research person. I'm the person that goes out and looks at things and goes, well, what's happening there? That's a bit different. What's happening? But I love the way that you said, you know, the police have gone on and they've done their research and this is what they found. So I've got a question. And this might actually, you know me and my questions. Is that why we've got different road sign shapes?
Good question. The part of the issue, I'll tell you a quick story, and I hope this relates to it because I have this tendency of going off on tangents, but I'll make sure I come back. We have a roundabout local to us, and earlier this year, they closed one of the exits. They were doing quite a lot of roadworks there. And as you approach it from one direction, it's a dual carriageway. There's two lanes as you approach. So they decided to put signs up, temporary signs, to say the left-hand lane is now only for turning left and the right-hand lane you can use for everything else. And I would say about 80% of the time that I went on this roundabout, people missed the signs and they used the left-hand lane for going straight ahead. And part of the theory is that even though the signs are brightly coloured, because they're not actively looking for them, because they know the area, so they don't need to look at signs, because we're biased to think, I already know what I need to do, that they then don't see when changes happen. And this is similar to kind of change blindness. So when it comes to signs, it's really important that we actively are looking for them, even in areas that we are familiar with, because when something changes, we don't see it. So even when signs are there and they're different shapes or they're brightly coloured, if we don't actively look, it's going to be very easy for us to miss them.
So that goes back to the police car stopped at the side of the road, and it just looks like the back of a car, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just approaching another police car and it's fine.
There we go. So it is. We get used to a norm.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of this links into our predictions. Our feelings of certainty or uncertainty, so whether we're comfortable and that we know what we're doing, or whether we feel uncomfortable, anxious, it all comes down to our predictions, doesn't it? If we can see something and make an accurate prediction, then we feel that we know what we're doing. We feel happy. And if we miss a sign, or if we don't notice that there's something conspicuous, then potentially we're going to make an incorrect prediction, and that's going to then lead either to driver error, or maybe doing something at very short notice, having to be reactive rather than proactive. And then those feelings of feeling anxious and nervous and, oh, that was too close for comfort, or what, or I don't know what I'm doing, because you haven't had enough time to do it. So it all comes down to predictions, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's an interesting one. I'm sure you've kind of had this conversation, Kev, in car with learners, where we are primed to see the vehicles that we see the most. So cars make up about 80% of the road users, where motorcyclists make up about 1%. So generally, when you ask a learner driver, and in fact, even experienced drivers, you know, what are you looking for? The obvious answer I normally get is, well, I'm looking for cars, because we're primed to see those vehicles because we see them more than anything else. So one of the things I try and get learner drivers and when I'm training instructors to do is I want them to see the smaller, more sort of squishy road users. So instead of getting them to say, I'm looking for cars, I want them to say cyclists or pedestrians or motorcyclists first, so that we're trying to retrain that brain to begin to think about those things. And it's interesting how you sort of mentioned about anxious drivers there, Tracy. I found with some of my learners who are feeling a bit anxious, actually actively getting them to look for signs can sometimes take their mind away from those anxious thoughts, especially if we've kind of introduced it into a game. I love playing games in my lessons as well. And I find that sometimes giving them something to concentrate on can just begin to sort of take that edge away of worrying about the other things that we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that we've only got capacity to think about so many things. So if you've left some capacity spare, then of course the little worries, the little what if thoughts, the other things are going to start, what I call the pesky thoughts, are going to start sneaking in. So the more you can do those sort of focused attention other places related to your driving, then you're going to use that brain capacity, the space that you have got, to concentrate on the drive. Mm. And that leads us really now nicely into negativity bias, which was the other thing that I really wanted to talk about, because it's something that Kev and I mention quite a lot. It sort of pops up in quite a few of the episodes where we'll say, oh, of course, that's the negativity bias. But we never actually talk about what this negativity bias is and how does it work and what is it. So have you got any thoughts about that, Tom?
I remember reading it, but I can't remember where it was. And I remember a sentence when I first was kind of introduced to negativity bias. And it was something like, bad feels stronger than good. And it's about how kind of we as humans, you can have a really good driving lesson and you've changed gear hundreds of times, but you stall once. And what do we remember? We remember that stall instead of the 100 good gear changes that we've kind of made throughout that lesson. And I think that just sums up humans quite well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And we've got a similar phrase sort of like in the mindfulness world where we talk about the negative things being sticky. It's like Velcro. The bad things stick, but the good stuff slides off. just like Teflon. So it still happens, but it just slides off. And it's amazing. We really are. Our brains are sort of balanced in this slightly, they're tilted. The balance isn't equal.
So where does that come from then? Where does the negativity bias come from? Is it something that we've learned? Is it something that we've developed over time? Where does it come from?
I have a small theory, and I'm going to be a little bit negative myself here. So the more I sort of look into driver psychology, the more that I understand about how humans are being biased, I have this opinion now that we are not evolved to drive. As humans, the world around us has evolved and we haven't. So we've still got our little cavemen and cavewomen brains, and our brains are still kind of designed to run away from lions and tigers that are going to chase us and eat us. So if there's something bad, I do think part of it is our brain is still designed to look at that because it's trying to protect us. It's that fight or flight kind of scenario that our brain deals with on a daily basis. However, it's trying to deal with that in a more modern world. And I think negativity bias is very much about that. It's our brain's way of trying to keep us protected, but it doesn't always do it in a positive way.
I think that's exactly it, because when I think of negativity, I always think of someone's telling me I've done something wrong, or I've done something and it's just, I've messed up.
That's just
you're giving an insight into me. So I suppose I've changed over the years, probably more recently than younger me. But what I think it is to notice it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the big things with a lot of people say, Kev, you're always so happy and you're always so... That's the outside me. The inside's going, no, don't do that. They're going to say something and you won't know the answer. They're going to ask you to say a big word and you won't be able to say it. That's my negativity bias coming up, because that's just me. But I can get round it now by making it a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that negativity bias, I think we need, like you say, to keep us safe. Mm. But also, how can we mentioned taming it, don't we?
So if you can name it, you can tame it. And that's one of the things that Sam Harper says a lot, who's been a guest on the podcast several times.
Yeah.
How do we get round that then, that negativity bias? Because it's always with us and it will always be with us. But what's the best, if someone's listening to this, what's the best way that they could start to get round a negativity bias that they might have?
One of the things that I learned early on, and I must admit, I haven't seen any other updated research on this, and I found this to be quite successful, is the 3-to-1 method. So if you have one negativity that you're thinking about, we need to think about 3 positives to outweigh it. The other thing that I found, and I find this works very well for me, is looking at things as opportunities to learn. So even if something is negative, I'm going to accept it. Okay, that wasn't as good. All right, I feel it's bad. But what can I take away from it that means it's going to be positive next time? So I think what I tend to do is reaffirm more of those positive thoughts by thinking about, I wasn't happy with this, but I've got 3 things that I am happy about, and I'm going to learn from it as well. But as we all know, everybody is different and different things work for different people, don't they?
Yeah, and I think it's that. The noticing the negative thing is the automatic, because that is what our brain is designed to do. So we shouldn't beat ourselves up about that when our brain does it. We should actually be going, thanks, brain. You know, you're keeping me safe. You're helping me survive. The thing to acknowledge is that to bring the positives in, that won't happen just by accident. It won't happen just by waving a magic wand. That's the bit where we actually have to make the conscious effort to do it. We have to train ourselves.
Yeah.
And the more we do it, the easier it will become. But actually, like anything, if you stop doing it, then, you know, suddenly you're off the wagon again, and you're back into the automatic negativity again. So it becomes a lifetime thing. It's something that you have to consciously do all the time, to think, oh yeah, that is negative, but what are the good things that happened? And I think anybody who's, you know, if they're any learners who are listening, and also sort of those full license holders who maybe can remember lessons, you might remember that quite a lot of driving instructors try and pull the good things. What was good in this lesson? Driving instructors often ask their learners to reflect, and not to reflect just on the bad, but to reflect on what went well, what was good about today's lesson. And I know that driving instructors often say it's like trying to pull teeth. It's just trying to get what was good out of a whole hour's lesson, when actually there must have been loads of really good stuff that happened in every single lesson. And every drive for a full license holder, at the end of the drive, yes, okay, maybe this happened or that happened, and, you know, but what were the good things that happened? What were the good things about that drive? Because from a brain perspective, you're lighting up different areas of the brain, and use it or lose it. If you're not lighting up the areas of the brain for the good stuff, then it gets harder. It gets harder to, you know, to think about good things automatically.
I read a really interesting bit of research recently, and it was to do with when people are giving interviews, and they did lots of different kind of bits of research on this. And we know from sort of, if police do interviews, they know there are huge deficiencies in how people remember things. And one of the things that I read about is what's called the peak end rule. And that is that we often remember the peaks and the troughs, and we remember kind of the last thing that's happened. And what they were saying on this research is that when they are encouraging people to think back on a situation that's happened, they want them to start at the end and remember it backwards. Because what can happen is, if you start trying to remember what happened at the start, your brain will often change some of the memories to fit in with what you think you know. So actually what happened at the end could be completely different, because we've changed what our memory is. So what I've tended to try with some of my learners as well is to get them to go backwards. So if something bad has happened at the start of the lesson, they remember the good bits at the end first. And then as they work back, sometimes it doesn't seem so bad because they've sort of remembered it the other way around. I just found that really interesting.
I think that's it. Great, because our memories are really unreliable. And I think most people don't realise this. Most people think that, oh, I remember it, I'm crystal clear. No, your brain changes. Your memory is probably the least reliable thing going, even people who have a good memory, because it just changes things to suit itself. It fills in gaps. It interprets things. your memory is hilarious. It's really funny. Yeah. So I love that idea of, actually, I've not seen that bit of research. So going from the, okay, what just happened, and then working backwards, going backwards in a time order, because you're more likely to be able to piece it all together that way.
Yeah.
And it's more likely to be accurate. I like that. That's great.
So that might help me when I go up the stairs and I get to the top of the stairs and then say, what did I come up here for? I'm going to try that one.
Yeah, step by step, going back down again.
And isn't it weird? We can go and deliver a mock test for 40 minutes and I can remember everything. But I walk to the top of the stairs and I think, I can't remember why I've got up here.
That's really good. That going backwards, I like that.
I'll try it. Next time I walk up the stairs, I shall try that.
So I think the message that we're sort of like trying to get across here to anxious drivers is, your brain is set up in the way that you do have this negativity bias. You're always going to notice the negatives. You're always going to have those negative thoughts. And when we spoke to Adam on an earlier episode. To Dr. Adam Asmore has done the most recent piece of research in driving anxiety. And what he found was that driving anxiety is caused in the main by negative thoughts. So it's having that space, that capacity to have those negative thoughts coming in. So when you know that driving anxiety is created mainly by negative thoughts, and then you know that your brain is set up in a way to have a tilt towards negativity in order to keep you safe, and then you know that actually to balance that out, you need to actively seek out the positive. You need to make a conscious effort to look at the positives. What were the positives? What could the positives be in order to balance that out, to start building confidence? Because otherwise, if you're not actively seeking out the positive, you are tilted towards the negative. It's not just going to go away.
Yeah. I think it's very much about that awareness, isn't it? Once you're aware of it, you can actively do something about it. And it takes hard work, doesn't it, to keep doing that? And it's, like you said earlier, it's a lifetime thing. We have to just keep working at it, because our little caveman and cavewomen brains will revert back quite easily.
Yeah. So next time, if you're an anxious learner driver, for example, the next time your driving instructor is saying to you, "Something was good about that," they're not doing it just for the sake of it. Actually have a think. Okay, what was good about that? Because the chances are your driving instructor can probably pick out 10 things, at least as a minimum, that were great about your drive. But it's no good them telling you. You need to be able to notice and acknowledge it and recognize it and reflect on it yourself.
Yeah.
So I've just... my brain goes off different ways and works different ways to most people. So I've just come up with something. Instead of saying like the negativity bias or what did you do that could have gone better, we could rephrase that or reframe it, whatever way you want to call it, and change it to what did you do to try and keep us safe?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Going for safe instead of positive. It's a bit more neutral, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
There we go. Just something that you two have been talking about. And I think, like, oh, is that that then? Because we all talk about that the negative is there to keep you safe, isn't it? So what did you do to keep us safe? I didn't go at that junction because I wanted to make sure it was 100% safe. Okay.
And as you were talking then, Tracy, as well, I was thinking that actually, if we use the words good and bad, they're quite subjective, aren't they? If I say something was good, somebody else might not agree that it was good. Where I think safe and safety, well, they're almost a little bit more black and white, aren't they?
Yeah, I like that. So and is that it, again? Oh, yeah, I like that. It was really good, Kev. Well done. So it's a bit like we often talk about not talking about confidence. We say use the word trust instead. So how much did you trust, or how much do you trust your driving or your decisions? Because we find that often with anxious drivers, working with trust is easier for them than working with confidence. There's sort of a bit of a barrier, an obstacle to thinking about how confident you are. So trust works better. I think that's really good as well. I think safety is another one of those that maybe takes out an obstacle. It sort of feels more achievable, maybe. So, yeah, what did you do to keep us safe? Because anything you did to keep us safe is a positive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
I often, with learners, I use the term options. So we'll talk about what were your options. Because then even if my option was I could have crashed, well, that is an option. We're not going to dismiss it. It's just, which is the most preferred option? So we can sort of go through positive and negatives in a more neutral way, as opposed to this was good and this was bad. We go, well, we've got these group of options. Which one is your preferred option at the time? And I think sometimes that can help people to look at all of those things and choose the outcome that they're more desired over, as opposed to what are we going to do. And this conversation came from a learner a few years ago, who we came to a junction, and she coasted around this junction and stalled, and it was quiet, and it was a good experience for her. And in our conversation, we were talking about options, and she gave me really two really good options. She said, well, the option was I could have either crashed into that other vehicle if there'd have been one, she said, or my other option is I could have just done it properly. And it made us both laugh, the fact that she was just saying, I could have just done it properly. But if for her, it was good to kind of talk through different options that she thought she had. And she came up with another good one. She said, actually, next time, if I realise I'm in the wrong gear, I could have just coasted round the corner without stalling. It wasn't the best option, but it was the safest one at the time. So it was really good for her to think through the safety part and the options that she had.
Yeah. That's like creating scenarios. You know, yeah. The option is like a scenario creating training.
Yeah. And let's face it, driving isn't black and white. This might not be the most popular thing to say, but as a driver who isn't a driving instructor, I don't think driving is black and white. I think you see people using their options or choosing their options all the time. So thinking in that way, yes, there is the preferred option and the desired option. And yeah, sometimes there might be something that maybe is good enough
for the time.
Yeah. And if it's safe and everything is okay, then that was maybe an okay option.
Yeah.
Well, I think on that note, Tom, is there anything else that you perhaps wanted to talk about or say to anxious drivers? Anything that we haven't covered that you sort of thought, oh, I'd like to get this in?
No, I think we've covered quite a good amount there. I think my final thing to try and help any driver is to perhaps look out for the things that you don't normally see, because the more we can begin to see the things we're not expecting, we're more likely to have an option to be able to deal with it.
What's that called again, Tom?
Cognitive conspicuity.
Just so I can practice it for next time, is this all?
Wouldn't have that been embarrassing if I'd have got that one wrong?
I should let you have another go, Tom. It's fine. Nobody would have known. Tom, if anybody's interested in sort of like following you, finding out more about what you're doing, where can they find you?
They can find me on social media. My contact details are on the ADI NJC website. And yes, you can find me on Facebook as well.
Lovely.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much for your time today, Tom.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
And nice to get longer than 5 minutes in passing in the corridor. Okay. Yeah. So great to talk to you for a bit longer. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
I'm just going to jump in here to let you know about our Drive Calm Journal. We've created a 12-week prompt journal to support our listeners to take action and improve driving confidence. The journal includes questions, prompts, and exercises to create an action plan and an opportunity for reflection afterwards. Search Drive Calm on Amazon to take a look. We hope it helps. Thank you for listening. Find out about the different ways that you can work with us on our website, www.confidentdrivers.co.uk, and begin to transform the way you feel about driving.